Well, a project like this could go on forever. We, you know, there are more questions raised than we answered in the work that we've done. But we're going to pull it to a close now. Essentially, the modeling that we've done over the past year has been completed. And our focus all along was, we're not climate modelers per se, we want to pull in some of the other research that people have done on climate modeling and see what that information might tell us in a modeling context if we try to say, well, what is this look like in Alberta? What's Alberta possibly going to, how is it going to change over the next 50 years if these different other studies have validity?
Well, the different models that you were running, what is the picture that they've drawn for you?
Well, as I said, there are different pieces of information that we're using, and one of them is the global climate models, the actual projections of temperature and precipitation. And the information there is showing about a 3 or so degree increase in temperature in Alberta over the next 50 to 80 years. And it may not seem like much, but it translates into climates like Medicine Hat being found up in Fort McMurray and Grand Prairie areas. So when you look at it that way, it's quite a big change. And then we worked in collaboration with Andreas Hamann in Renewable Resources, who's been looking at the linkages between climate and vegetation, seeing how the different biomes, you know, the boreal forest or grassland and parkland, are going to shift in Alberta after these changes in climate take place. And then our role was to add on a temporal aspect to say, well, okay, if Andreas's work tells us, you know, how the vegetation may shift, how long is it going to take until it actually gets there? And so we added a disturbance model to the earlier work of Dr. Hamann, and then over a 10-year by 10-year cycle, generated maps of how these different biomes may actually shift, tracking them in essentially in real time to the extent that our assumptions were valid.
So tell me exactly then what these shifts are going to be.
Well, some of the most prominent ones, I guess number one, would be the shift in grassland. So we see an almost doubling in grassland over the next 50 years. And there's a fair amount of confidence in that finding, I believe. First of all, the climate models, we ran three different ones, and they were all fairly consistent on the temperature changes in the southern part of the province and up in the Peace Country. So that's fairly consistent there. And vegetation actually isn't much of an issue in this case because it's all, or not all, but a very large proportion of the true grassland and parkland ecosystems in Alberta, they've already been cleared for agriculture and for settlements. So we're not really talking about a vegetation change there. The vegetation's gone. It's been replaced by, you know, agricultural fields and settlements and so on. So what we're talking about here is the change in the climate that the farmers are going to be experiencing, and that's going to essentially happen instantly. What I mean by that is that they'll feel it as soon as it happens, the change in crops. A hotter and drier summers, it'll imply different practices within the sub 50 year time range that we've been looking at. So that was the largest change. The next one was shifts in the boreal forest. So as the grassland moved north and kind of encroached into today's parkland, the parkland itself, that's the open grass and aspen grove kind of communities that are common around Edmonton here. Well, that starts to shift north, and it goes into the boreal forest. So in that case, it's a little more complicated since the trees, the mature trees that are in the forest, have quite a good ability to withstand changes in climate. But the ability of those forests to regenerate under a new climate is what becomes compromised. So, you know, let's say it gets a lot hotter and drier in a run of 5 years. The adult trees, they may stop growing, but they'll continue to live. But if a fire comes into that area and knocks those adults out, well, now the ability for the cones to produce viable new growth most likely won't be possible anymore, and you'll start to see conversion into the more open kinds of forest and aspen moving in and so on. And that's probably the next or second to the grassland. That was the most important change that we saw.
What does that mean then for planning for the future if we're essentially going to be losing our northern forest?
I think it's the research we have done doesn't pinpoint exact areas. It's very broad, so we're talking boreal forest without being able to pinpoint exactly what part of it. The indications are that it'll be the edges of the boreal forest where they interact with the parkland, or that transition zone. Probably what we're just going to see is spreading out from there. So you see the line between the parkland and the boreal, that north-south line moving northwards, and then the whole Peace Country, it's already almost a grassland, parkland area, that's going to spread outwards. That's more of an east and west, right? So if you had confidence in there, you'd start to say, well, what about, you know, decision-making that is long-term and what does it mean for us? For example, protected area planning or wildlife habitat planning or even talking about priority uses. You know, we have a new land use framework coming in. You know, if you knew that an area was going to really struggle in terms of regenerating forest and you knew that forest fires are likely going to be increasing, you'd have to say, well, we can continue to do business as usual and fight every fire and replant it every time that it fails. We'll just replant it again, and you know, by golly, if you work hard enough, you will get a forest back there, and people have done so. Or you could say, well, you know, we're fighting a losing battle here. If you look some of the paleological data from a period in our past, about 6,000 years ago, when it was about 3 degrees warmer, you know, that whole boreal region was parkland. So you know, that long term, that's where things are headed. Maybe we should start to plan for that and say, well, some areas may be, you know, not a priority for forestry anymore. Maybe it's going to be something else. Now, that with that said, though, there's a caveat that we haven't identified yet, you know, where these changes are really going to happen and you know, how fast. Our research suggests that within 50 years, we should see at least about 20% of the boreal going through conversion. But that's a first approximation. What will need to be done is, I think, have some monitoring done and really look for some of those initial transformations. You know, they're not going to happen all at once. You're going to find, you know, after a burn happens in certain areas, a failure to regenerate, and research should be focused on those areas to see, well, how did it really happen? And then, you know, revise our models. Our models are the start of a process, not the end of a process. And over the years, as confidence increases in our ability to you know, say this is where the change is going to happen, this is how it's going to happen, I think then you can start looking at some actual on-the-ground changes, like planting a different kind of tree or going to an agricultural system that, you know, is structured differently, those kind of things. For now, it's basically a heads-up. The change is going to happen. I think we can say that fairly confidently in less than 50 years, but more work will have to be done to say exactly where it's going to be and how it's going to look.
What are the gaps for you?
Well, there's probably three main areas of uncertainty. One is that the climate models themselves, the one that's these international teams that put these very complicated climate models together. We use three of them. There are a few others, and they've increased in sophistication greatly over the last few years, but that's not to say that they really understand what climate's going to do and how it's going to respond to greenhouse gas emissions and so on. So there's still a lot of uncertainty there. The second area is this linkage between climate and vegetation change. Our work, it's all statistical. It's a fancy statistical process that links different vegetation types with different climatic patterns based on their current distribution. Those may not hold in the future. So one needs to work on that and start looking at some of the mechanisms underlying those linkages and get more confidence in you know, how climate really is going to drive the vegetation change. And the last thing is the part that we did ourselves, the disturbance part. It was very simplistic. It's a first cut for each area of the forest. We just just used one disturbance. You know, in the north it was fire, and in the grasslands it was drought, in our parkland, sorry, it was drought and so on. But we know that there are actually multiple disturbances in each area working together. And as I said, some research on and some actual failures just to really document how it happens, the specific steps and what is most important, I think would be very helpful in strengthening that disturbance point, that disturbance part of the model, and allow us to more accurately put a time stamp on how fast these changes are going to happen.
Have you been able to document where change due to climate change has already started to happen in Alberta?
Again, that's not our specific role in this, but certainly in areas like Alaska, you know, the farther north you go, the more the change is happening. They've documented quite a lot of change there already. Forests moving up mountainsides, you know, the lower kinds of vegetation now being found higher and drying out of peatlands and things like that. In Alberta, there's been less monitoring and research on this, which is, again, I think one of the probably the benefits of this study. It's a sort of a wake-up call to say we probably need to get rolling on some of this work. But all that said, there is one area that is already, I think, arguably undergoing change, and that is the grassland-parkland boundary. And, you know, none of these things happen gradually year by year. The way it actually happens is in fits and starts, in particular with large disturbance extremes, like really big fires, or in the case of the grassland parkland, it's droughts. And so in 2002 and 3 there, we had a fairly severe drought over a lot of the lower parkland region, and this is in Saskatchewan and Alberta. And so there are people right now working, people at Northern Forestry Center, Ted Hogg and others, have been doing flyovers and aerial mapping of the aspen forest there and trying to document the amount of dieback. There has been a lot of aspen dieback due to that drought. And again, they're trying to quantify, you know, how fast is it happening, what kind of areas, and trying to develop a relationship between the degree of drought and the amount of dieback of aspen. And what they're finding, it's a sort of a moth eaten kind of change. It's like I say, it's not a steamroller moving from north to south. It happens in fits and starts, and it's sort of a, you know, getting eaten out from the inside, more holes, and they get bigger and start to coalesce and so on. And so, you know, arguably that is the first signs, I think, of some of these changes starting to happen, and that research is just now underway.
Thank you very much, Rick.
You're very welcome.